Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hey, everyone.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 66 is being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So, every time I say veterinary and I kind of like jumble it, do you know who I think of?
No, who?
Joe Sear.
Oh, why?
He's in the veterinary industry, but he said veterinary.
Veterinary.
Veterinary. Yeah. So he always mispronounces it. So, Joe, I know you're not listening. You should be, but I kind of threw you under the bus there. So, we are once again broadcasting from absolutely beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia. Other than a couple of pop-up thunderstorms for the last week or two, really, really nice.
Yeah, it's actually been super great. A little humid, like you said, with the pop-up thunderstorms, the humidity rolls in and rolls right back out, or kind of gets heavier after the rain comes in. But. Yeah.
So, last week's word of the week was cholecystoduodenostomy.
Yes.
Attaching the gallbladder to the upper small intestine called the duodenum.
Duodenum.
Or duodenum. and making that communication so bile can flow into the small intestine. So, I was listening to WSB radio today, okay. Which is the local, I guess what, ABC News on TV, but the radio, it's WSB, News Talk radio. Okay. And they always on Sundays have half an hour to an hour long sponsors who come on the radio. They are quote unquote experts.
Okay.
And today at at 3 o'clock, the expert was some surgical center in Atlanta and they specialize in
Coley?
No.
Duodeno?
No, completely not at all. Hernia repairs.
And humans.
So I'm thinking, wow.
Is that what we're talking about? Like they specialize in human hernia repair?
Yeah. So yes, I mean, they're medical doctors, surgeons, hopefully, who they have this big surgical center and all they do is repair hernias. And I'm like, good gosh, how much more specialized can you get? Which you can,
I understand, sure.
But they were talking about congenital hernias. They were talking about umbilical, which is why I brought this up, hernias. So, duodenum, duodenum.
Umbilical.
Respiratory. Temperature.
Yes.
Yeah. So, anyway, that doesn't really happen. But I just...
I'm sure it does.
I just kind of chuckled. Somewhere. But I really still can't believe that you have this specialty surgical group that all they do is fix body wall hernias. But they do, evidently.
Yeah, and it must obviously be pretty profitable.
And they're advertising on WSB. So, yeah.
No referral needed?
I don't know. I'll give them a call tomorrow and see. We'll see what happens. They did talk about, they were talking about imaging and what's needed if you have an umbilical hernia, mm-hmm. and it's not been repaired before, then no imaging is necessary. But if it has been operated on previously, they would like to do some imaging because they realize that a lot of these imaging studies such as CT scans are now having to be paid out of pocket, which tells me insurance isn't covering them because probably they're not indicated, at least in their opinion. But they kind of quoted around $1,500 to $2,000 for a CT scan, which we're usually about half.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's pretty fair.
But yeah, I was kind of surprised. But they're a private group.
Yeah,
right. They're not a hospital system.
Yeah, for sure.
So, so you ask about the word of the week.
I did.
And I don't know that I have one.
Let's go. I have a word. Do you have a word?
I was going to go with a word regarding the little chihuahua we saw today about what's going on externally, middle, and possibly internally. I'm pointing to a body part on me right now, and it's above the shoulders.
Yeah, but I was like, I was gonna say I was gonna go super vague.
Okay, go do it.
So you're talking about ear.
I was gonna say otitis was our word of the week, but
okay. I was gonna say vetted.
Vetted. Oh, I like this because it's never made sense to me.
Yes.
On the human side, why you vet a political candidate? Are you?
You vet anything. Mm-hmm. So, like, more so, I think the what doesn't make sense is why a veterinarian is called a veterinarian and not
did you look this a medical up before doctor you came of up animals. With this word?
No. But don't you find that very interesting? So, vetted essentially means to look for, like, examine something for accuracy, right?
Well, like, I don't know. I'm looking up right now because I've always wondered why, like, if you have a horse and you're doing a pre-purchase exam, you have it vet checked or you have it vetted. And again, political candidate, they're vetted. Somebody for office, political office, or judicial office, they get the ETTED. We have a publication that comes out monthly in our industry called Vetted. So, what?
I think that's like vet ed, though. Like vet education. I think that's the publication.
Okay, you think it's VET-ED?
No, I think it is VET, like all in caps, and then ED in lowercase.
Like animal. So, did you find it? Or
so, no, the only thing I can find in the dictionary, so dictionary.com basically says that vetting or vetted is to appraise, verify, or check for accuracy, authenticity, validity, or etc. An expert vetted the manuscript before publication.
Huh.
So, I mean, if you go to dictionary.com and you look up vetting, it's going to show you, you know, slang for veterinarian. But I think it's interesting that you to your point, you vet all these things for accuracy, but like, why is a doctor of veterinary medicine not just like a VD? Like, why is it a veterinarian? How does veterinary come into animal? I guess we talk about these Latin words often.
So, okay. We're looking up this as we go, and we will probably have to get back, but I'm not sure what side I'm on, but what does vet mean? But the question was, what does V-E-T-T mean? Vet, verb. Vets, vetted, vetting. Number one, to make a prior examination and critical analysis or detailed evaluation of a document, a line of action regarding someone or people, etc. If someone is vetted, it is checked carefully to make sure that it means the requirements that the government officials have established. Well, that makes no sense, that sentence. But
so yes and no, I think it may. So we think of veterinarians more so now as like small animal companion pets, but like think about when it was created, and maybe I'm totally down like another situation, but historically your horses, your cattle, like they weren't parts of the family, and so you were essentially vetting them. You were looking for them for accuracy and freeing them of, you know, disease or whatever, and sort of for transport. So
well, this last thing I'm looking at with Wikipedia, which is obviously, I mean, it's pretty.
A lot of times, Wikipedia
can be
vetted.
Accurate, cannot be, but it says the word veterinary, so we're not talking vet, V-E-T-T, or vetted, comes from the Latin veterinae, meaning working animals.
Working animals, yeah.
Veterinarian was first used in print by Thomas Brown in 1646. So, I will challenge you, Angel Martin, to figure this out because I have wondered about it, but quite honestly, I've never followed through to figure out, are they similar? Are they different? Are we talking about the same thing in a different way? But
yeah, so that's interesting. So vetted, it would be V-E-T-E-D, right? Like that's.
I think there's two T's.
You think so? I think there's just one.
I think there's two.
Well, we'll get back to that.
Okay, so, well.
So we kind of have a word of the week, vet / vetted / vetted, right?
Yep. So we talked about, I think, probably 5-6 weeks ago that, maybe 2 months ago, things often come in threes or so it seems like they come in threes.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the third esophageal foreign body today.
Okay.
I remember the last one
was a sock.
No, the first one was a sock. The last one was a hard foreign body. I said I remembered. I obviously don't, but it was I think it was a bone of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
We had one this morning that we came in and worked on that was huge. It was bigger than like a 50-cent piece, and it looked really weird in the esophagus right over the heart base.
And it was thicker too, right?
Yeah,
so
it was like 4 poker chips
thick. Okay.
And it was about the size of a poker chip, actually.
Okay.
And this was in an 8.8-pound Chihuahua Lhasa type mixed dog.
Uh-huh.
So we were able to retrieve that, and it got hung up on the way out, like right at the proximal esophagus, right after the dog swallowed it. We lost it a couple times. I think it took us 4 retrieval tries. But once we finally kind of wiggled and, you know, turned our heads and noses and mm-hmm. and necks and things differently, we finally got it out. That was kind of cool. So non-invasively to be able to get that out.
Yeah, that is very cool. So obviously saving the dog from an open abdomen explore or open chest explore, because this was truly lodged in the esophagus. In
the esophagus
behind
is
the lungs.
Kind of like the colon. You do not want to do surgery on it, especially from the chest cavity going in.
Yeah.
You always worry about perforation. This particular foreign body had been lodged there, I think, about 3 days, which is longer than any of us, including the dog, would want.
So how did the owners know? Do you know the history about this situation?
Not eating, regurgitating, not feeling well. She was holding her neck a little funny.
Okay. Reasons why imaging is super important, right?
Oh yeah.
So on a lateral x-ray, a lateral meaning the dog was laying on its side.
Yep.
Super obvious.
Well, it was, but it was weird looking because it was so big. It was bigger than the dog. And that, I guess that's what I'm saying. The esophagus, let's say, is the size of my index finger.
Mm-hmm.
This was twice that big. And in reality, it was twice that big. So how did the dog swallow this, just inhale it?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Crazy.
That
so,
is crazy.
We're very hopeful that she will do fine. She's doing great as of this evening.
Yeah.
So. All right, let's jump into stories. And so since you were the story finder this week, I will let you take the lead.
Well, I just thought it was interesting. Well, you know, we always talk about kind of some of the, awareness weeks throughout the year. And the one I found actually starting today is the U.S. Postal Service National Dog Bite Awareness Week.
Huh.
So I found it interesting, and if you look through here, there's a number, 5,800. Do you see that anywhere?
Where are you at?
It's right there.
Okay,
so nearly 5,800 postal employees were attacked by dogs last year. So, I mean, that's kind of crazy. I have never lived really in an environment or a city or a neighborhood where my mail carrier walks.
Right.
But I know that in a lot of urban,
you think that's what
places,
it is? They're walking, or are they just parking their truck and going up to the front door?
So I think in a lot of those super urban areas, they walk. They carry a big bag. They might have a truck. They park their truck around the corner, and then they walk an entire block or two. I also think that in rural areas, you know, they're driving their trucks up and their trucks have open doors for the most part. So I just think that 5,800 dog bites in mail carriers is a lot.
That is a pretty big number. Maybe they need, when you were talking about that, a lot of times I'm at the park running, I see people walking around, they have a golf club or a club, and they're being very defensive, and I kind of chuckle, but I also realized they probably had an experience. You had an experience like 2 years ago when we talked about this at a local park where a German Shepherd charged you.
Yeah, off leash.
Because he was off leash.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner's like, oh, he's fine. Yeah, no, he's not fine. He's going to potentially kill me.
So I guess, you know, dogs are great, but we have to remember that they are, you know, animals essentially.
Yeah.
And so they definitely can be dangerous. And so we talked about, you know, the French bulldog, which I think I told you, but we obviously didn't share on the air, that I read a little bit more into that story. It wasn't, you know, a French bulldog. It was a French bulldog mix. Mm. So mixed with a larger breed dog. But nonetheless, the fact that one dog can kill a human being, you know, and one dog that lived with someone, much less a dog that doesn't know you. So it is definitely pretty dangerous. And so...
So the interesting thing that I'm looking at on the story was majority of victims are small children, the elderly, and postal service carriers in that order. Small children, I would agree, because they're either infant toddlers and something happens in the house, which we kind of experienced that many years
ago. So the 5,800, just so I can clarify for the readers, so the 5,800, that's truly postal employees. But what it's talking about is there's 4.5 million American dog attacks in America each year.
4.5, and so they're number three at 5,800.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's what you were saying. So the majority of them are small children, elderly, and then postal service carriers.
And so small children, I think, in the house or in the backyard, but also if we somewhat pick on our friendly breed, the American Pit Bull, mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call them, we know those dogs get super amped up whenever screaming and yelling and running starts, and they start chasing
right.
kids or young adults or adults or whatever right. the case may be. So that's pretty interesting. Yeah, I wonder, so are UPS delivery men considered in that, I wonder?
I don't think they're considered in that number, but I would bet you that they're probably greater if
coming up to the door, the
right
house,
around
the...
there. Yeah, because they go up to the house. And historically, you know, you used to open your door for a package, and now most places are just kind of leaving them on your doorstep. Yeah. And especially with coronavirus, I mean, everyone has non-contact delivery.
So my PSA regarding this would be, if you are a responsible dog owner, or if you're not a responsible dog owner, become a responsible dog owner and realize what your dog is and is not capable of. And if you have a dog that can be dangerous in certain situations, whether it's people coming over to your house, the mail being delivered, etc., I do think that's the owner's responsibility, training that they can do, but also keeping society out of harm's way.
Yeah, but so to your point, right? Like, if you feel like your dog might be dangerous, a lot of times your dog is not dangerous. Your dog is... I guess triggered, right?
Yeah.
How many times do you ring the doorbell and the dogs flip out? That probably happens at everyone's house. So if that's you, take some responsibility. Like we've talked about historically with like the fireworks and that kind of stuff, like put your dog in a crate. If you have a package being delivered and someone rings the doorbell,
yeah,
you should probably go put your dog in a separate room, then open the front door.
So quick story. This goes back 25 years ago. We had a Mastiff that we adopted.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great dog for us. I'm gonna equate him to a lot of Mastiffs, but also a lot of German Shepherds. Super great with the family, but other people, he got a little sketchy. He wasn't very trusting. His name was Nicholas. He would actually, if somebody came over, he would be very excited and greet them at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come in, you would shut the door, and within 2 minutes, if they went to pet him, he would get really fearful and he would bite at them or bite them. And
oh,
so
wow.
It took us like four, five, six times, because we were kind of young and dumb, I guess, back then, to realize that. But once we figured that out, then every time we have somebody over or expect anything, you know, anything or anybody to come to the front door, we put him in the back bedroom. Because we take him out of that situation
right.
and try to make it better. And so that's all I'm saying is...
So
just
it's not only fearful for the people, right? But like the dog is reactive for some reason.
Yeah.
It's fear and aggression and stress and anxiety. Yeah. Like all of those
Somebody's
things.
Somebody's in my personal space.
It's not because the dog is just downright mean.
Right.
It is a reaction and it's really the only defense they have.
There's no such thing, really, I've come to figure out as a quote-unquote bad dog. They don't... You know, they only know what they know, and they know how to react based on their experiences. And so, you know, if your dog has anxiety issues or acts poorly in public or in the clinic or when people come over, you know, he or she's not being bad. They are just, they're being animals. And so we, on two legs that stand upright, need to use our big brains and try to help
right.
help the situation.
For sure.
So.
Well, definitely, hopefully everyone will kind of take that into play and keep our postal service healthy and
safe.
Yeah,
that's just crazy. And then you have a story about pigs.
I do have a story about pigs. So I pulled this, and it honestly, it made me think of Graham, you know, because he talked about pig
hey,
farmers.
Graham.
And
hope you're doing well.
Things like that in his family. But
Grant.
Yes, Grant. I thought it was interesting. I didn't honestly read a ton of it, but I remember with coronavirus, which obviously we're still going through this pandemic. Obviously, we have not forgotten about it. We just choose not to talk about it on the podcast every single time.
Although we do, because we just did.
Right. But with the coronavirus crisis, American pork farmers, you know, basically the pork plants were shut down because they were hot spots essentially for coronavirus infection. And so the title reads that farmers find ways to save millions of pigs from being euthanized. I can only imagine without reading all the whole story that it is both a good thing that all these pigs' lives were saved, although they were meant for slaughter anyways. But it's a great thing for the farmers because it allows them to somewhat save their livelihood.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking literally millions of hogs that would have had to be euthanized. And so essentially what they did was they created shelter places for them and they allowed them to live longer rather than go to slaughter at their mm-hmm. marked date.
Yeah.
And so obviously good for the pigs because they weren't euthanized for no good reason.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I said, they were meant for slaughter for food production, and that ultimately is now what their life will be.
So, all right.
Used for.
So, do you remember me saying that when I was a young lad?
A young lad.
I grew up with my dad managing a pig farm.
I have heard that. Managing
pathogen,
a pig farm and then showing sheep.
Pathogen-free hog farm. So I'm pretty well versed in the hog farming industry. We kind of got back into it later as well. But as a side note, do you know who Jimmy Dean is?
Like pork sausage Jimmy Dean?
Yes. So his name's on the pork sausage. And he actually, I don't think he still is. He was a country and western singer. I could not tell you like the songs he sang. But back in the day, he had like maybe two hits in the day. But one, the reason I'm bringing this up is I remember crawling in the truck with the trailer behind it and taking hogs up to Jimmy Dean's, I'm trying to think what to call it.
Plant. Processing plant.
Processing plant. Thank you. That's the great way to put it. And going in and meeting Jimmy Dean, sitting across the desk from him.
Oh, you met Jimmy Dean?
Yes, yes. I don't know if I shook his hand or not.
I've never heard this story.
But
were you like literally like a young lad, like 11 or?
No, I was younger than that. I was probably like 7, 8, or 9.
Oh, wow.
But that was just really cool. You know, I mean, he was in a James Bond movie. Again, he sang. He has his name all over the pork products, so. Anyway, point being, I am very much attuned to the hog industry.
Okay.
Not really, but yes, very cool article because the other thing they did is I think you call them feeder pigs. I know like with sheep and cattle, you have these feeders and then you have more herd stock, breeding stock. And so the problem was you had all these pigs at the right age, weight, and body condition that needed to be slaughtered.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't slaughter them within a certain period of time, then they become quote-unquote useless to everybody. And so, yes, the hog farmers did not want to have to euthanize them to make room. So they found other plants across the country to send them to. They
right.
actually slowed down their feeding ration so they weren't gaining as much weight. And I think that's awesome innovation and
yeah,
fluid
for
change.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
And I know a lot of people might be kind of put off about, you know, processing plants and feedlots and hog farms, but it is unfortunately or fortunately kind of the way things go in the animal industry with regards to meat production.
Yes. And so, again, whether you choose to eat meat or not, there's obviously a huge debate with that in and of itself, but nonetheless knowing
but,
that
yeah.
the meat industry obviously does care about the animals that they're producing enough to not just euthanize them all and let them quote unquote go to waste.
Yeah, because that would have probably been the simplest thing to do, take their loss and then just move on. But mm-hmm. they definitely kind of thought outside the box, and moving forward, I think they're in good shape. So
yeah. So interesting story, right? We've talked about how we have puppies galore. Mm-hmm. We are in the point where we're seeing less new puppies in our hospital, and we're seeing more of like the repeat visits.
Right.
So those puppies coming in for boosters and things. So I thought it was interesting. I read an article and I actually saw it myself on Instagram. But Jennifer Lopez, you know who she is? J-Lo?
J-Lo, yeah.
She got her son, Max, a puppy.
Okay, what kind?
She got him a golden doodle, and she posted a video on Instagram with her giving the puppy to her son. He's not named yet.
How old is he? Because we're almost out of the... Well, we are out of the spring breeding season, so
there's still some puppies being produced. No, I don't know how old he is. He looked like a puppy.
Okay.
But anyways, her quote says, "Welcome to the fam. We got Max this adorable little golden doodle. We haven't named him yet." So the name apparently is a toss-up right now between Tyson and Yankee. But they're obviously going to keep their watchers attuned to whatever they decide to name.
So I understand the Yankee.
Yeah, I don't know the whole Tyson thing.
I don't know if that refers back to Mike Tyson or, who knows.
I don't know.
Do you think we would ever have a chance at getting J-Lo on our podcast to talk about her puppy?
I'm going to say no.
I'm going to agree with you. It'd be cool, though, if we could.
It would be kind of cool.
Maybe remotely.
Yeah, maybe remote.
So we have something in the works with a remote guest on our podcast, and we're going to do the same thing on theirs.
But I think it'll be the opposite at first. I think we'll be guests on theirs. We'll share their podcast as ours that week. So it's a podcast out of Canada that's about as old as ours is. This will be our episode 66. Mm-hmm. They're in their late 50s, early 60s. Okay. Granted, we skipped a week or two the first year, right? Like our quote unquote bye weeks. Remember BUYBYE?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, we'll keep that up to date.
Okay. Well, J-Lo, if you're out there, we would love to have you on our podcast.
Yes.
You and your son and y'all's new dog,
Yankee. I'm going to vote Yankee.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool name.
Yeah.
Especially like if your husband is A-Rod.
Yeah, is like, well, yes. I don't know the best, but one of the best players, period. But one of the best Yankees for sure.
Yeah. So. A-Rod.
Okay.
For
All right.
sure.
Ready to sign us out, or do we have other things to talk about? What do you think?
We're approaching 27 minutes or so, but let's just one brief thing, right? So we haven't really talked about protests on the podcast, and I don't really want to talk about the protest. I want to talk about animals in the protest. So I thought it was interesting, right, with coronavirus. It was pretty quick when pets actually started supporting people with coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the fires in Australia? Yep. Pets were there supporting people. Just before that, pets were in hospitals. They obviously go into places like nursing centers, elementary schools, that kind of stuff to help with therapy.
We've also
and
talked
pets.
About... I feel like school shootings and big tragic events like that.
Yes.
Some organizations will bring their therapy dogs in.
Yes.
Just to help the people affected deal with the stress and anxiety going on in their lives.
Yeah. So we've also talked about like the different types of species that are therapy animals. And so I found an article and I thought it was very interesting that in Portland, Oregon, there was a, drum roll please.
I'm going to say turtle.
Da-da-da-da, a llama.
A llama.
A no drama llama at the protest.
Huh.
His name is Caesar, and apparently he lives in Portland, Oregon, and he is a therapy llama.
That's crazy.
It is very crazy, but apparently the owner of the llama brought him out there just to show love and support. I don't know.
Hopefully didn't spit on anybody.
Interesting. But very interesting, right? Like, people and pets, essentially, like we said, and it'll be at the sign-off, but without people, pets are simply animals. A llama is a llama. to me unless somebody has a relationship with it. And now it is Caesar, the no drama llama.
Huh.
And it is their pet.
Huh. Reminds me of the famous children's book, Is Your Mama a Llama?
A llama or a llama?
A llama, yeah. A llama. So before you sign us out.
Okay.
So that is very interesting. It makes me think of a movie I recently watched called The Highwaymen, which is a movie about Bonnie and Clyde. It has Woody Harrelson and Kevin Costner in it.
Okay.
Not the best movie I've ever seen, but it was entertaining.
So it's obviously not like a new produced movie. It's an old movie.
Not super old. Within the last year or two.
Okay.
Because both of those guys are looking kind of old. But
no offense.
The reason I bring it up is early in the movie, Kevin Costner's character, Manny, I think his name was, had a pet wild pig.
Okay, so a wild pig?
Wild pig, yes. So one of the guys from law enforcement from Texas, from Austin, is trying to recruit Kevin Costner's character, who is a Texas Ranger, who they got disbanded like back in 1934 by Ma Ferguson, I think was the governor.
You're losing me on the whole
of
the story.
So he shows up at Kevin Costner's house, and he walks up to the sidewalk going up to the house, and all of a sudden this wild pig runs out, kind of chasing him down.
Oh my gosh.
And Kevin Costner comes out and gives a couple of whistles like, "Down, boy, down. This is my pet pig." It was a gift. My wife doesn't like it, but we're friends. We're good buds.
Wow. So, that's hysterical.
But we've talked about potbelly pigs as pets, at least, you know, internally here, maybe not on the podcast, that I just like, wow, did that really happen? And
yeah.
Maybe it did. Maybe it didn't.
Yeah.
Made for a good story. Made our podcast. So.
That's right. All right, guys. Check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.